If the U.S. presidential results reminded us of anything, it's that once again, Black women are an unstoppable force when it comes to grassroots activism, community organizing, and rallying supporters when it's time for our voices to be heard. And now, because of social media, we can also highlight the good work being done by our sisters in other regions. My name is Jason Diakite, here with my co-host, Chef Marcus Samuelson, and you're listening to This Moment, the transatlantic bridge connecting Stockholm, Sweden to Harlem, NYC. And over the next several weeks, we're going to be putting a spotlight on some of the women doing that work, from the States to Sweden. And to kick things off, this week we chat with one of the most influential people in media today, Ms. Angela Rye.
And so everything that I do is about ensuring, not that I'm seen, but that I'm opening a door. Not that, you know, I go in to, you know, to kill it and make the most money, but that I go in to have the greatest impact to touch the most amount of people.
Angela is the CEO of Impact Strategies, CNN political commentator. She's also the host of the podcast On One with Angela Rye. And she's graciously agreed to share a platform with us. So let's just jump right in, folks. This moment in 3, 2, 1. This moment.
This moment.
I am so hyped and excited because we've had some incredible guests. But I think this is like the creme de la creme. Miss Angela Rye, welcome to This Moment. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be able to share space with you gentlemen.
Tell us, like, both where you at, like, geographically, but also spiritually and mentally in this moment.
Ooh, I love that question. So I'm in LA physically. I feel like I am more present in my body than I've ever been. I started doing this like detox, Marcus, that you may or may not like. Shout out to Red Rooster, by the way. I got a story about Red Rooster. But I've been doing this detox and I took a major break for Thanksgiving and I was like, dang, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get back to it. But I really have been able to. So just over the last couple of days doing like a juice cleanse, but with the acai bowl because I need something to chew. Like really trying to, you know.
So we're talking a no sugar, like all that food that y'all serve at Red Rooster.
No dairy, yeah. No meat, like none of it. And it's just been good because what happened was when I started going through this cleanse process with Queen Afua, by mm-hmm. the way, who I love. Shout out to Queen Afua. I just wanted to be more focused on like purpose and mission and not so distracted by food. Sure. I feel like sometimes that can be the case, especially during COVID. Like Black folks are going to mm-hmm. go to comfort, right? And the comfort is in the food. So I was like, you know what? I got to do something different around here because I can't fit my stretch pants. Now, you know it gets bad when you can't fit the stretch pants.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you because, you know, you share a lot on Instagram.
Oh, believe me, it was a whole problem. So that happened and it really felt more like it just felt spiritual. And I feel good. I feel really good. So
can I want to go back and talk about this moment because Kamala now is going to be sent out to a world, not just she's not the American vice president, only first Black Asian American and African American to the world. But that doesn't happen in a silo. I don't think any of this happens without the grind that Stacey Abrams did, Tamika Mallory did, and Angela Rye. You are in that group. And I live in New York. I see it. Me and my wife, we root for you every day when you come back and battle on CNN. And now the world's going to find out because it's changed politics forever. Are you tired? Are you excited? You know, how do you feel post-election?
Wow. So probably a little bit of both. But first, I really feel like I need to give and pay homage to my leaders. Like it is an honor for me to be able to speak and use my voice. But there are so many people that put their bodies on the line every single day. Some of those folks are sisters who are also in journalism in some way. Others are on the ground. And the people that come to mind in particular are Brittany Packnett Cunningham, who's a commentator, but more than a commentator, she's also an activist and just started a new podcast. Sunny Hostin, who of course is on The View, but a legal mind who is brilliant and hilarious. Her book is right here. I'm about to name some of the people that whose books are right there. Jemele Hill, who of course is a writer for The Atlantic, and holds us down every time she opens her mouth. Alicia Garza, who's another author right here with The Purpose of Power. Of course, the co-creator of Black Lives Matter, founder of Black Futures Lab and Black to the Future, which was one of the most comprehensive agendas put out by Black people for Black people after talking to 30,000 Black people this election. Tiffany Cross, also right here, brilliant author, incredible host, dope writer, just a great sister. Latasha Brown, who, you know, single-handedly, whether it was for Doug Jones in Alabama in that special election or now, has carried Black voters on her back with Black Voters Matter. And Joy Reid, who, of course, like, just represents us so well every single weekday night on MSNBC. And Erin Haynes, who is one of the founders of The 19th and is brilliant and represents us so well through the power of the pen. These women are not only my sister friends, but they are people who I look up to. Some of them are younger than me, but I look up to and revere greatly.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
So growing up in Washington and growing up in Seattle, I mean, who gave you that, the debate skills? Because your debate skills are like...
Where did you sharpen that sword?
Yeah.
You know, that I've seen you use many a time.
Oh, no, shut it down. Shut it down.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny because people ask this a lot. Growing up with my dad, Eddie Rye Jr., he, like, I never, you know, I always had the right to have an opinion. My mom is like that too. I say all the time, jokingly, but it's kind of serious. My dad is a bigger feminist than I am. So the power of my voice has always been, so I could have an opinion on what we were eating, on, you know, where I went to school, on what books I read, like always. And my parents assured me of that. I did not understand elders or old people who would shut down the dreams of a young person because I didn't grow up that way. My point of privilege was I grew up in a house where my parents let me be an entrepreneur, selling popsicles and pop in front of the house. And they let me try a gazillion things. And so I just, I didn't even have a concept for that. So definitely our kitchen table, or even if we were standing around in the kitchen eating, was always like a debate. And I didn't know it was argumentative until in relationships later, right? Where they're like, why are you always fighting? I'm like, I'm fighting. I didn't know I was fighting.
So you got your 10,000 hours. You got your 10,000 hours of honing that skill without you even knowing about it.
That's facts. I definitely didn't know that I was arguing. Mm. I guess I know now.
But that's a beautiful testament. I mean, a lot of the people that I see, you know, people that are good in negotiation and so forth, when you talk to them about it, you know, you dig deep. It's usually in childhood that happens, you know, without you knowing it. It just goes into your spine and it becomes second nature. And it really has to be. You know, I've spent time researching, you know, I live in Sweden. My parents are American. But the CNN we get in Sweden is not the same as in the United States. We get CNN International.
Yeah.
No. So I've spent time researching you and I've seen so many clips of you in these debates, you know, with that sharpened sword. And one thing that struck me is that, well, both that you have that warrior spirit, there's a fearlessness, and also there's a very, you know, I feel like you're speaking for for us, for me, for my family. Mm-hmm. My dad is an African-American. My mom is a white American. But still, it's for us. It's for our side. One thing I thought about, I saw you in a debate with let's say, the opposing team on Chris Cuomo the other day. And one thing is protecting the narrative and making sure that the other narrative doesn't go unchallenged and unchecked. I mean, that's the same in Europe and globally, right? And that one version of truth isn't the dominant one, that it's checked. And you're on the barricades checking that. But another thing I thought was, Do you think that you can actually change opinions? Like reach the people on that other side? There's so much talk about, is Joe Biden and Kamala, are they going to unify the country? Unity? Are we going to, like, the polarization of not just the United States of America, but the global polarization that's going on? Do you think that it's actually possible to change the opinion of the, let's say, the other side?
Here's what I believe. I believe that a changed mind is always a possibility. Otherwise, I wouldn't engage in discussion. And I need to be the one that has a shift in my perspective. What I can tell you, honestly, is that a lot of the ways in which people are asked to engage on cable news is not going to be the way that minds are changed. It is something that disturbed me because I really crave an elevated discourse. And so if you can instead shift to say, okay, I really want to understand your point of view because I really don't get it. What is it? And then where did it come from? And, who hurt you sometimes, right? Like, if you have to go down that far and you just don't have that space in a segment. And so what I've worked really, really hard on, you guys, is to create that kind of space on my podcast, to create that kind of space in learning from some of the best. I just did a podcast recently with a young lady who's 10 years old. And as a journalist, and she's like, I'm like, okay, how do you decide to ask these questions? Like, I want to be the type of apprentice where no matter someone's age or experience or their difference in posture, I want to be able to learn from something from everybody. And I can only teach as much as I'm willing to learn myself. And so that, I think, is really becoming a shift. I get that, like, there are a whole lot more viral moments when I was in the posture of, like, let me set you straight. But I would rather approach someone with a spirit of love and a desire to shift together, because we are too divided right now. That doesn't mean that, like, I'm going to go out here and be like hugging folks in MAGA hats. Right. But I am saying, like, no, if you're willing to see that your ways are actually harmful to others, like, I'm willing to engage in that. But I want to I want to protect my own energy and space, because I've left several segments on air where I'm like crying. I'm so upset I'm crying. And it could have been a moment where it was
viral. No, but I could tell from the passion that you bring to that. The passion that you bring to it. And this is not just with you or with any of us, just a point of opinion. It's, you know, for who you are as a person, like physically and spiritually, from your ancestry, heritage, and where you stand, right? Standing up against white supremacy is not it's not even a matter of choice, the way I see it. And that's the way I was raised too. It's, genetically, it's something that we have to do, right? There's no other side.
Right. When you break something down and you go in the, in the Breakfast Club, or you go on other shows, right? It includes a huge part of the population that completely feel disengaged. And I think that's one of the things that I appreciate the most. Politics is also about living a more informed, healthier life. And that is the space that I feel like you've navigated very, very well. Even 10 years ago, it wasn't the same type of political conversation. So I want to thank you so much for that connectivity. My other follow-ups are twofolded. A, the list came out, this incredible communication team that Joe Biden and Kamala, Vice President Kamala Harris put together. These are all colleagues. These are all friends of yours. What do you expect from the communication, and how do we now hold people that we feel probably more engaged with? How do we hold people accountable? It was easier probably when there was the circus that we have right now, right? The starting point is basically you lie and why are you lying, right? Now there's people that we all know or we are engaged with in some level. How do we keep the same fire with some people that we respect? It's almost harder in a way. So, you know, especially for someone like yourself, because these are all people that you rub shoulders with.
And the folks who are named that are actually friends, there won't be any challenge because they know exactly where I stand and why I stand there. So there won't be any challenge there. I'll tell you that the bigger concern I have right now is who is Black in the cabinet, right? Like, what are we actually doing? Do you understand, Joe Biden, that Black people dragged you across the finish line in the primary and in the general, and therefore there should be some restorative, reparative, reparations, justice to ensure that we actually are not only seen and visible, but that you're hearing and all of our power. Like, what I'm not doing is, there have been so many think pieces about which part of the demographic won him the election. And the truth is that it was Black people who carried him across the finish line in Milwaukee, in Philadelphia, in Georgia. Detroit, this period. Like, there's no point of discussion. And so what I would like to see, and quickly, is for Joe Biden's team, the, you know, the white men who have been around him for decades, to pivot, because they're not serving him well if they don't tell him the truth. I am comforted by the fact that Cedric Richmond, who of course is a member from New Orleans, a member of Congress from New Orleans, and also someone who is a former Congressional Black Caucus chair, had an extensive agenda while he was chair for Black people. I'm comforted that he'll be right there in the inner circle. I also think it's important for Joe Biden's team to understand that, yes, you picked Kamala, but you wouldn't have won without Kamala. And so that does not suffice as the only person, you know,
to be in the cabinet.
Not cabinet was a Black woman. There needs to be a Black man. There's been a lot of discussion about Tony West for Attorney General, who was over the Civil Rights Division under Eric Holder. He happens to be Kamala's brother-in-law, but he is incredible. And there isn't anybody more qualified than Tony. So that's a conversation that's happening right now. Congresswoman Marsha Fudge for agriculture. Most of what happens in the Department of Ag is not about farming. It doesn't mean that there should be a blind eye turned to farmers, particularly Black and brown farmers. But a lot of that is about food security, right? Mm-hmm. SNAP benefits. There's nobody better on that issue than Marsha Fudge. We shouldn't be talking about Tom Vilsack. We should not be talking about Heidi Heitkamp. We should not continue to make pathways for folks who, at the majority level, did not vote for you, right? 55% this time of white women voted for Donald Trump. Why are we having all these conversations to accommodate people who aren't even checking for you? Right. That doesn't make sense. So no, I think that we need to make sure that we shore up the base of the party. And that is by doing right by people finally who have always saved it from itself.
Yeah. Now, and taking it back to what I was asking you about before, maybe this election was, in hearing you speak, not so much about, you know, changing the opinion of the, say, opposing team, but of actually re-energizing and inspiring the own team, right? The people to go out and vote Democratic and not just stay at home and feel complacent about it. And that was the huge difference.
That's the thing, right? Like, they can easily go there. It almost went there this time. But Black people were facing, you know, racism in this country, brought to light by, you know, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and George Floyd. Black people are facing economic injustice, brought to light by COVID, by everything else that we're experiencing, and of course, COVID. And those disparities in saying, okay, I can continue to play footsie with this terrorist who's currently in the White House, or I can try to bet on somebody that I think at least, you know, served with the first Black president, perhaps understands these issues a little better. He said some things that are troubling me. He's done some things that are troubling to me. But I want to believe that he could change if he's surrounded by the right people. Which brings us right back to the main point. He's got to be surrounded by the right people.
Yeah,
I think there are three major moments that made the election happen. And they might not be in the right order, but I do think that starting with COVID, it changed the trajectory completely for, you know, there's 6 million people gap in terms of who voted for Joe Biden versus, 45. But that mishandling on that, people on the sideline that wasn't sure, that was just happy to go along. I'm not sure there would have been a change without that. So that's one major fact. Number two, it is when Joe Biden goes to South Carolina, because before South Carolina, he was behind, you know, big. And it was a lot of Black people that were waiting for what's going to happen in South Carolina. He got carried over in South Carolina. And then I think, thirdly, it is all the movement that happens around Black Lives Matter, right? Those three things for me, we would not necessarily have, we wouldn't be in the same place. And I couldn't tell you which one is 80% of this or 30, 30, 30. I'm not sure. But these three moments for me starts, for me, really why 2020 changed in the election. I'm not sure it would have done without any of that. And the sad part about that is that tons of people had to fight and die. That was unnecessary if we would have dealt that. And that is something, there's going to be tons of post-election why. Now is not the time. But as a person that lives in the United States, that love New York City, that loves Harlem, that love America, I'm unpacking that right now and I'm thinking about that. And it's not pretty. I mean, I don't know if what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with you. I think it's it was the intersection or the convergence of those, you know, three things, our economics, COVID and the racism. And I hear you on the Joe Biden in South Carolina, but again, that's Congressman Clyburn. You know, that's the whip of the House. And I think that right now, you know, we find ourselves in a really interesting position because Congressman Clyburn is now saying, hey, you need to pick some more Black people, Black women in senior roles. But during the general, when we were trying to get Joe Biden to pick a Black woman, you know, Congressman Clyburn was saying he could pick whomever he wants. Why is that shifting now? We have to be consistent in what we say and in our approach. And his voice is major. You know, there isn't anyone in Democratic politics that doesn't listen to what Congressman Clyburn says. And so I think that his consistency is super, super important right now, especially when we talk about not diversifying the cabinet for the sake of it looking like the face of America. This cabinet actually needs to be Blacker than the face of America, because that's who won Joe Biden the election. When you look at progressives and how they're able to make demands of more conservative or moderate Democrats, they don't hold back. They say these are the things that we require. And for whatever reason, when it comes to Black and brown folks, the expectation is that we sit idly by and that we're quiet and we just wait. Don't worry, they're going to get to you. That doesn't work. And the last thing I'll say is Joe Biden and his team will be making a terrible mistake if they try to go about this presidency in the same ways that Barack Obama did. Barack Obama has limitations that Joe Biden has never had to deal with in his white life.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? You have white privilege, so use it. Use your white privilege to open doors for Black people, for the allies you had, right, to help you win this election. And I think the other important thing is that there's, you know, again, he was dragged across the finish line. This wasn't an excitement about Joe Biden thing. This was a fighting to live thing. This was, you know, all about doing, you know, what they think might be better. So you need to blow them out the water for Kamala in 4 years, because you said you're not running again. Donald Trump is already starting to raise money for 4 years from now. So you have to kill it. All of that is in the balance of the Senate, which, of course, there will be a runoff in January for two Senate seats that will dictate just how bold he will be able to be, at least from a legislative perspective.
For our international audience and for myself included in that, who are not as familiar with the, you know, the American compared to the European systems, which is kind of a straightforward democratic, you know, one person, one vote. The vote goes direct to the candidate or party that you voted for. You know, the American system is full of complexities, also for being such a young democracy that it is. Why does an election like the Georgia one come to a runoff? What does that runoff? I understand the end result. What's hanging in the balance is the majority in the Senate. But how come it comes to a runoff, and how does that actually play out?
Yeah, so that's a great question. What a runoff is normally because a candidate doesn't reach the 50% or more threshold. So that means that they didn't have a clear winner in the Raphael Warnock versus Kelly Loeffler race. There were several candidates in the race. And so it was, you know, 30%. Rafael did the best. 30%, 16%, 20%, you know, all of these. And he has to do the runoff because, again, nobody was at the 50% threshold. With David Perdue versus John Ossoff, the same thing happened. Just in the same way that we were talking about Black people coming to the table, saving Joe Biden, including in Georgia, they did the same thing in the John Ossoff race, which what I think is great about it in Georgia, or great about in Georgia, is it wasn't just Atlanta. It wasn't just Fulton County. It was a Fulton County, DeKalb, Cobb, and Clayton counties that really you saw a surge, a huge surge in Black voter turnout. So that's what's happening there. And it's just super important. What I think is so incredible about this Georgia runoff is there are celebrities from all over the country and influencers from all over the country who really want to get involved, to the point where
everybody could focus on Georgia.
Because they know what's in the what's hanging in the balance. Yeah. Literally nothing will get out of Senate. They won't be able to appoint any cabinet secretaries, no judges, no ability to move a stimulus package for people who are suffering right now if we don't get the Senate. And so I'm thinking about me saying we, because normally I'm like the Democrats, but in this moment it's we, because I want to get something done. Even if I don't like the whole thing, I know it'll be better than not getting anything done.
Can I just ask you one thing about, you know, in cooking?
Yes, I want to talk about cooking.
The key's anonymous queen that shouldn't be anonymous and were never anonymous in their communities, right? They were Black women very often, and they were activists and advocates. Very often activists in the civil rights movements, quietly, and some of them not so quietly. So we have incredible examples. We have Miss Leah Chase from New Orleans, you know, with Dookie Chase that just passed. We have someone like Sylvia Woods just a block away from me, from, you know, iconic Sylvia. But we also have a lot of people that are not known, Sophia Wright or Miss Georgina, that raised money for Club of Nowhere, where she raised $100 a week by making pies. She's a mother of six. She got up 6 o'clock in the morning, at 3 o'clock in the morning, baked pies, and then donated to the civil rights movement, right? So those were cooking, and women were entrepreneurial, but activists and advocates. I feel like you are also an advocate and an activist and an entrepreneur. Finding that space, how did you land and find, because those are three different pockets that goes into one, right? You're an entrepreneur. You're definitely an advocate for the culture, but you're also an activist, a modern way activist. For people who are inspired to be part of activism and being entrepreneurs, what are the advice, particularly for women of color?
You know, my holistic therapist started saying to me the other day to stay in my lane. And I asked her, I was like, I don't feel like I have a lane. And she was like, but it's whatever space you occupy. And that was such a freeing moment for me, because I remember in law school, somebody saying like, Angela, you can't be a jack of all trades. You have to be a master or something. And that felt so confining to me. I'm like, I feel like I'm supposed to do more than one thing. And I decided to just try things. I think the biggest lie we tell young people is like, you have to pick a thing. Like, are you going to be a firefighter or not? Like, you know, like you have to pick a thing, like, you know. And I think that life is about the journey. It's just about experiencing several things. And if you have an interest in serving your community, maybe that won't be your primary job, but that doesn't mean you don't have any way of giving back. I think, Marcus, you've also done this very well. Like, you've used your kitchen, your space, your ability to cook to serve the public in two ways, some for free, some for a fee, right? And I think there are so many other ways that we can bring our skills to bear, even if, you know, there are skills and gifts plural and talents plural, to bear to serve the people. I think the most important thing to me is righteousness and fairness. And so everything that I do is about ensuring not that I'm seen, but that I'm opening a door, Not that, you know, I go in to, you know, to kill it and make the most money, but that I go in to have the greatest impact, to touch the most amount of people. And that is what is always at the intent of what I'm doing. There are moments where it's off kilter and I'll know, because I'm like, that doesn't feel authentic to me. And those are the moments where I have to shift, where, you know, it's like, you know, ego is leading here, or proving a point out to, you know, proving something to somebody is the point, or I'm gonna get you back, or whatever that is. And I think that's the moment where it becomes a distraction. But even, you know, with this election and trying to see shifts with the Biden administration and otherwise incoming Biden administration, it's about what is right for the people. That is where I'm going to be. I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. I'm not trying to call you out. I'm trying to make sure we get to the right place.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Another thing that I carry with me, there's this like almost election myopia that happens each American election, is that, you know, even though, you know, even way before Trump, the GOP has been laying the groundwork since forever of suppressing the black vote, not only the black vote, but the brown vote, and making it harder for non-GOP voters to actually get an ID in Alabama because he closed down the DMVs. And it's like the election is always so dramatic and it sucks out all the air. So it's like you never get to the point where can we deal with this voter suppression next time around people actually have access to the vote? And again, looking through it from a European perspective, where we're sitting right now, where access to the vote is never the question, or access to ID, or the, you know, votes aren't suppressed in that way, other than just, you know, that people fall into complacency and don't want to go to vote. But the access is there. Mm-hmm. Like that, how can that be? I mean, ever since the Voting Rights Act and up until the Supreme Court shut it down again in 2015, you know, that the groundwork has been laid to kind of keep suppressing the vote, gerrymandering, closing down DMVs, making it difficult. And if that isn't freed up, then we're always going to be in these tight races every time.
Right? I think they're gutted, the Voting Rights Act. And I think that the important thing to understand here is that you're talking about intent and will. And there are enough people who are, you know, in elected office to do the right thing, but they don't want to, because them providing an opportunity for us to vote, to cast our ballots without restriction, doesn't serve them, because if we cast our ballots without restriction, they'll never win. And so that is the main thing to understand, that, yeah, there are people who know this is wrong, but they also know that it's benefiting them. And so they have, we have to hope that we have folks in office who are paid with our tax dollars that will do the right thing because it's the right thing, not because it serves them or not. You saw an increase, a surge in voter ID laws, in the cutting back of early voting days, in making absentee voting much harder. When in 2010, after Barack Obama became president in 2008. Right. So there was a push to actually shore up voter suppression efforts. They won't call it voter suppression efforts. They'll, of course, say
exactly. Make sure it didn't happen again. And even so, we won. Right. Even so, we won in 2020, which makes that win.
Yeah.
Even
but
more
I mean,
incredible.
The road to get here was COVID.
Despite,
you know, and you know what I'm saying? So it's like,
yeah,
yes. But and that's what folks
Deus ex machina. Yeah. Yeah. The hand of God had to come in and make it so like something like a pandemic.
I want to switch to some goodies, like some quick things here. So right now, when you're not, what's in your kitchen? What are you cooking? Taking the cleanse aside, what are you eating if you don't have time to cook? Because a lot of people have now, because of the pandemic, started to cook more. So what's in your kitchen? What's it good? If I'm coming over, if we're coming over to Angela's house, what are we eating?
First of all, this is exactly what I wanted to talk about. because I have questions. I've been doing like my podcast. We had these master classes, and one of my master classes was with Patti LaBelle. Mm-hmm. And
yes, of
course. She taught me how to make some salmon, like salmon cakes. They were so good. But I love cooking, and the places where I need the most help, Marcus, are my presentation, because I feel like my food tastes better than I can throw it on the plate. And like learning how to time myself in the kitchen, because I feel like I'll make something and then it's been sitting too long and now it's cold. So there's like all that. And then I really wanted to take you in here because it is a hot ass mess. Like I have so much stuff. So like I was like, I need to go through my spice cabinet and like put it in alphabetical order or something. So I need to know all the tricks.
So you find it when you need it.
Yeah, I mean, the first two of those we're going to have solutions to easily right after, you know, when we can hang out again, right? Number one, Jason and I owe you one. So I'm coming over and cooking with you. So that we can do that in New York, LA, whatever you want. That's done, right? And you know, food in general, I always feel like if everyone just learned to cook, just like 10, 20% a little bit better, right? Because then we will eat better. Seasonality will come into play, right? We will probably eat less animal protein as well, which is something we all need to start thinking about, cooking and eating based on a spiritual compass. For cleaning out the pantry, can't help you with that one. We just got to do it. We got to do a cookout.
I can't find anything. And because I can't find it, I go buy it. So I have like three things of flour right now, or like five cayenne peppers. Like it's ridiculous. And then, so you asked me.
I bet you Marcus's pantry looks the same
okay,
way,
well, I feel
Angela.
Better. Now, I bet now I'm going to be like, this is actually the pantry of a chef. Thank you.
And we just did a cook.
We just cooked together.
And Marcus did actually, as far as presentation, there was one thing that I picked up. And it was like looking at the space of the plate and like spacing things out, like not putting things like in the middle of the plate. That was some of the stuff I was catching on.
There's
this
actually
is second
nine,
nature to you, but to us, it's all new.
Yeah, there's nine steps that we can kind of break down. They're very simple. We can all taste salt, sweet, sour, bitter, spicy, and umami, right? Those are the six flavor points that we all, and probably umami is probably the one that got to us on this side of the world, the Western world, the last, right? Umami is why we love a burger. There's a lot of umami in a burger, in Parmesan
tomato.
Cheese, in miso soups, right? So those are over there. But then also the other reason why we love things is also because aesthetic, just like you said, right? So when you plate something, you want to plate in odd numbers. Maybe you want to put three carrots on the plate or five things on the plate or seven, not beyond that. You want to put it off center, not in straight on the center of the plate.
Now you're getting the
You want
the
to think about it from
right
a
here.
Positive and negative space.
Yeah.
Fragrance. If it doesn't smell right, right? That's why when you have a cold or COVID, you can't taste any other food because fragrance is such a 85% of your taste. But Angela, it's in your nose, right? And we think about it from a mouth experience. No. It's in your nose. So, and the last one, so it's aesthetic, it is fragrance, and it's also textures, right? If something is, if that mashed potatoes tastes like glue, you could have had the best potatoes, but you stirred it in too much. If that salad is soggy, it's not that there's something wrong with those beautiful farmers market ingredients that you go to Santa Monica and buy. It's because you tossed the salad too early, right? So texture is one of those things. So if you can think about it from those things, these 9 steps, you're going to be golden. And then we clean out the pantry. That's the last thing that we
do. I will tell you this.
Angela's like, no pressure.
You just
asked
about what I'm cooking. I'm going to tell you what I made for Thanksgiving. So for Thanksgiving, my responsibilities were mac and cheese, which, like, I will put that up against anybody's. It's good. My candy yams,
nice,
unbeatable. I made sweet potato cupcakes, which were very good. I made a cranberry. Oh. It was a cranberry upside down cake, but I never do a recipe like as I see it. I always have to remix it. I blame that on 90s R&B hip hop. So the remix was...
Remix was always better.
The remix was adding pineapple to it. So I put crushed pineapple in the batter and then on the paste where you bake it and kind of caramelize the top. And it was really good.
I love that. That's
Black
good.
Eyed peas.
It sounds like you did a good 60% of that dinner.
But who else was at the table? Like, did everybody bring something? Did the whole family?
Boyfriend made fried turkey. And then he made the greens. And let me tell you guys, this was so shameful. I was like, do you know what you're doing? Like, I was so on him because the greens is normally my responsibility. And I told him, I said, your greens are better than mine. Like, they were, he did. Okay.
That's magnanimous of you.
He killed it.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
See, they, you know, in giving that space and being able to give it up.
I did not give space. Yeah. Let me tell you what I didn't do was give space. I was on.
He worked under pressure.
On his
but
ass.
Once the result,
like, I was like.
You gave him his props.
This was me. I was like, what are you doing? So good, though. He killed
but
it.
But at the end of the day, you gave him his props. He got
it was fantastic.
And I think that we all know that the turkey is just a reason to set at the table, but it's the sides, it's the second and the third day's leftovers that are really the good stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, no, I don't know anyone actually that prefers the turkey before the leftovers and sides. And, you know, we talked about a lot on the show, but, you know, Jason's mom has a really good sweet potato souffle. So I think one of those sides you need to take back, Angela. Like, I don't know about all that. Jason's mom might, we might.
But it's a complex dish to make, man. You know, that's all for like there's so few Americans in the small town in Sweden where I'm from that all the Americans would get together and celebrate Thanksgiving. And it was a big deal, right?
Yes.
Because this is the one big, you know, forget the heritage of why, you know, the roots of Thanksgiving, but just the communal thing of gathering around that turkey and everything. So everybody would cook like one thing and bring, and her thing was this sweet potato souffle, and it's magnificent. But that in itself takes a good 6 hours to prepare.
Well, you can bring it, and I take it as a challenge.
I wouldn't recommend
it. I feel
it.
Like sweet potato souffle is just sweet potato pie filling, but let's see about this. Let's see, am I wrong?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Yeah.
Out
yeah.
There.
Absolutely. I'll bring it.
I got a couple more very, very quick ones as well. Like, what's on the Angela playlist right now? What are we excited about music wise? Like, you know, what do we?
Yeah.
What are we like?
You know, I just found out. I think it was Sunday. Was the 25th anniversary of the My Life album, Mary J. And I was like, how?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
How
oh,
am
yeah.
I this old?
Of course.
So I've been bumping Mary J.
Yeah,
exactly.
I love, there's something that I just started listening to that just came out. I listened to the Meg Thee Stallion album. It was a little much for me. I really like her. She's got some bops, but, you know, everything don't have to be about money and sex and paying for it. Cause that's, I mean, you know, I think there are other ways to have those conversations. And
we got kids at home too, so I don't dare really play WAP. Definitely can't have the video on at home. It's just
the songs kind of sound like WAP. Honestly, I feel like it's a whole lot of extra WAP on there. That's like, all right, what else are we doing?
But I got to give it to Mary J. Because you know when Kamala stepped out, when Kamala walked did that walk,
it was Mary J.
Well, Brother Van tried to say it was for Beyonce, and he got like. You know, Angela's like, what are you doing, Van? Like, what are you doing, Mr. Jones? Don't show your age. That was Mary J.
Man, I don't know what happened. I'm going to just say that he probably had, you know, was up late and didn't sleep and made a mistake.
Excited.
But the thing I will tell you, too, really quick on music. I don't know how many of us would have gotten through quarantine without D-Nice. And so what's really on my playlist is anything that he's playing. Shout out
Boogie Down Productions.
You know, he's just been such an incredible gift to all of us. I'm thankful that I can call him my brother for real, you know, through this time. So it's, you know, I'm open. I feel like my ears have been open. I've been bumping Fela Kuti. I've been like, on stuff. But it's not necessarily
that's
on the
what
new
you
stuff.
Need in an American election.
Now, was when we launched the book, The Rise, you know, we launched it at Schomburg. Thelma Golden opened it. And, you know, we couldn't do a normal party. But Jason Moran also opened, you know, he started to play for the opening for our, you know, when we started the event at the Schomburg. And then D-Nice did the after party for the book. And I just felt we're at Schomburg with Thelma, with Jason, with D-Nice, we're blessed. And we just kicked it out to the world that way. No audience.
Because, you did a digital event, of course.
Yeah, we did a digital event. Yeah. We were at the iconic Schomburg, you know, right there. You know, Pigfoot Mary used to have her incredible stand. And it was like at this historical space, right? 135th and Lenox, where you and I walk constantly when we met Uncle Earl. Mm-hmm. You know, so we did, and I think that's what 2020 is going to be. Like we want to feel the moment of celebration. We just have to remix it a little bit, but we're still going to be us. We're still going to do us. And
when it finds a way.
You know, I just felt blessed. I'm like,
No, but I mean, one of the silver linings I will say in this kind of digital quarantine that we had to go into is, for example, a D-Nice. Mm-hmm. I also enjoyed Erykah Badu's home sessions.
Yes.
I mean, that gave me like an insight that we don't, you know, I love going seeing Erykah Badu live, of course. But on stage is one thing. But seeing her at her in her house just jamming, you know, it just a beautiful access that we've had into each other's lives, you know, in a sense. And people kind of letting their guard down. But having said that, I can't wait to get back to the physical space and the, you know, the concert and the where we can get together and get down, you know.
Yeah, and we're going to host Angela's tour when she comes to Europe because it's not an if. It will happen because that I feel is that there is an audience for what this movement looked like in modern time. That it doesn't only belong to America. Your Black excellence that you are presenting, it does not, I'm sorry, it doesn't belong
to... No, it resonates globally.
America only, like it represents Europe too, and there's an audience that is just thirsty for it. You know,
I am so grateful for y'all and for that.
I will also say, and I always say that to our American guests, that the fact that like the big difference now between like Black Lives Matter in 13, 14, 15, and in 20 was just the global. The answer that resonated across the globe where you had BLM demonstrations in countries I didn't even know there were Black people in, you know, but just like from New Zealand to East Europe to England to Holland and Sweden, you know, in a quarantine, people still came out in a way that I've in my lifetime never seen before.
I know we're running out of time, so I have two more questions before we got to run. So it's two things what I'm really impressed with. It's choices, and we talked about a little bit. You could clearly, your choices, you could have started your own law firm, be a partner in the law firm, had a much different route, but you choose to do this journey, which I think is just excellent and brilliant. But the other choice that's going to come down the road is... When are you running?
I believe that I was blessed to be a communicator, a translator. And so my calling is to create space for conversation, for to use my words as a tool for healing and to create opportunities for other young people. That's what I believe I'm supposed to do. So I'm leaning a lot more into content creation, into those opportunities. I should be signing a book deal pretty soon. I think it's this week. I want to be a communicator and a bridge for my community. Like I know the things that need to be done. Thank God to policy experience or for policy experience and being raised by an activist. I want to work on those things and make sure that we're communicating about them in ways that are beneficial, where our folks feel heard and not feel invisible. You know, and not feel voiceless. And I want to ensure that when people are like, oh, you speak for me, which I'm grateful for. I want to make sure there are other people who are of similar experiences to that person or this person. So it doesn't feel like there has to just be one. We as a people are failing us if it's all about one person. We should have a whole bench, and we should be developing talent and creating opportunities for folks. So that's what I want to do. And I'm happy to advise candidates always. I do not want to be the candidate.
I love that. And you know what? The beautiful thing about this is that you're young and you have the rights to change your mind.
Oh, so I'm 41.
So we're throwing it out. She might change her mind later on, because we need you, whether you're a candidate, whether you're in this position and whatever it is, we need you and we thank you. And thank you for inspiring us. And I think this has been an amazing, amazing conversation. Europe, Scandinavia is ready for you.
I would love to come to Europe. And I'm grateful to be able to have shared this space with you all.
Wonderful. Until we cook in LA or we cook in New York, we're going to clean out that pantry. And I really want to check the boyfriend's greens. We don't, you know, we're going to keep it at that because we can't taste it. But we're giving it an A+ right now until we get the chance to test it and check it.
I welcome the opportunity.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys. I so appreciate it. Take care. Bye.
Special thanks to Angela's team, including Naja Mix, Obi Okizi, Jaleesa Montague, and Steven Anderson. Next week, we're going to chat with Alice Barkunke.
I'm a bit shocked. Can we cut this part out of the...
we can't cut this out, but that's the difference. Marcus wasn't destined for public office. You know, obviously, even at a young age, he disqualified himself.
He really did.
It's going to be good, folks, so stay tuned.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.